Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Triple Equals, 50% more equals, 100% more absurd. Episode 182, React Native on the Web with Simon Sturmer.
Hey everyone, welcome to React Native Radio Podcast, where we explore React Native together. I'm your host, Jamin Holmgren, and I am joined today by all three of my co-hosts. We have Harris. Harris, how are you doing? You're in a new place again.
Yes. Hello.
Where are you at today?
So I'm in Vancouver City this time. I was in Vancouver Island last time. So
in a, okay.
Yeah, beautiful neighborhood called Kitsilano, if anyone knows. Yeah.
You're still kind of inching closer to me, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Eventually, you'll be at my doorstep. Aditi, you're back. Hey, how are you doing? And welcome back.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I missed the last episode, so glad to be back here.
Yeah, we're glad to have your help. Last one was just a complete disaster without you, so.
I'm sure that's not true.
And Robin, thanks for joining us as usual. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, surviving. Ready for the holiday week next week.
Yeah, it is looming. I think that this episode will probably air after that.
Well, a little peek behind the curtain. We are recording this before American Thanksgiving.
That's true, yeah. Everybody who thought it was live on their podcast app is now very shocked. but yes, we do record it prior. Today, we are going to be doing a panel, but we have a guest. We have a guest panelist. His name is Simon Sturmer, and he is a former Googler. He worked on YouTube. He is a founder, speaker, trainer, consultant, React and React Native enthusiast, and the React Native Bay Area meetup organizer. I think there are 700-ish people. Is that right, Simon?
Yeah, we're a pretty good-sized group, you know?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, of course, this year it's a little more challenging. We'll probably talk about that as we get into the episode, but I assume that means you live in the Bay Area then?
Yeah, so I live in San Mateo, so it's like 30-40 minutes south of San Francisco.
Very cool. Before we get into the topic today, let's just talk a little bit about your background. You know, where did you grow up? How did you get into coding? You know, what's kind of been your career path?
Yeah, totally. So I grew up in Kansas City, which is where Aditi is. So shout out to Kansas City Chiefs here.
Yay!
And I came to the Bay Area in 2013 to take a job at Facebook as a UI engineer. And so originally working on React on the ads infrastructure team.
That was really early then in the React world.
Yeah, I think React had been open source for months, like by the time I had joined. So I had never touched React before. And, you know, they were like, cool, do you want to interview in React? I'm like, no. Can we interview in anything else? Right. So we did some other JavaScript stuff. I think they asked me to center a div in CSS or something.
Wow, I would never have gotten the job. But
yeah, so I went, you know, I spent a number of years at Facebook. And I was there when React Native internally was being developed. And it was called Catalyst back then. And if I remember right, it was Christopher Chedeau who originally told me about React Native. And, you know, we were playing around with it internally. And it was like, you know, buggy. It was exactly as you'd expect a pre-release thing to be. Not long after that, the ads team rolled out the first React Native app, which was the what they called Madman or the Mobile Ads Manager. And that was, I guess, the first app ever built in React Native. And I had just a very small piece of involvement in that. So I did not, I wasn't directly on that team, but we were helping out because I was on the targeting team and there was targeting involved in that. And then I was there at Facebook when it was open source to the public in 2015, which was really exciting. And we were all shocked that it had a new name.
So what did you think of React when you first heard about it? You were early on. So here you're kind of going to Facebook. I'm sure that's, you know, kind of exciting to move into a new role there, but they wanted you to start working in a brand new technology. I remember back in those days, it wasn't really clear that React was going to be the quote winner of these framework wars at that time. So kind of where was your headspace at when you went there?
Yeah, you're right. It's not only just that we weren't sure that it was going to be the winner, is that it was like there was a winner, right? So it was Angular, right? If you remember that Angular was the winner
right.
at that time.
That's true.
And had an enormous lead on React. And then React had the additional disadvantage of having this weird syntax. And we were like changing the JavaScript language,
JSX.
Right? And it's like, why are we trying to support angle brackets in JavaScript? And everybody's like, this is never going to work. And Anyway, so so it was quite the underdog, yeah. And but you know, so Facebook is one of those places back then where it still had, and I know it's changed over the years, but it still had that kind of like overgrown startup feel. So every team chose their own tech stack. There wasn't very many standardized stuff, and so React kind of organically grew within the org, right? And so the individual teams would choose which framework they're going to use. And more people were getting on the React bandwagon and were like, there's something to this thing, right? So, you know, for me to go in there with no React knowledge was not a problem because a lot of the teams had no React knowledge and they were just picking it up as we go. And so Facebook has this amazing internal bootcamp, which lasts, I forget, something like 8 weeks. And so you go through, you know, and learn all the internal infrastructure. And then they had this spin-off UIE bootcamp, which I think I was part of the very first batch. And so some of the people who are, I don't know if you guys would know like Jin Chang or I think some of the other names. So these people were running this internal UIE bootcamp and they were teaching us React. So it was really cool to learn React from those folks.
So how did you move on to like React Native from React, I guess? Was that the ads manager?
No, I just took a bet on, I just thought it was such a cool, you know, I really liked the mobile space and it just became so accessible to JavaScript developers, to web developers, to jump into React Native. Like all of a sudden we're mobile developers overnight. And so when I left Facebook, I just took a bet on that. And so I started a software agency and we were building React Native apps for startups back before anyone had really known what that is. But a lot of like early stage startups, they didn't care so much what you were building it with as long as it worked on both Android and iOS, which is a bold statement because back then you could barely say it worked on iOS and Android.
We had the same issue at Infinite Red. We actually had sold two projects, mobile projects, and we were going to be doing them in native code. And we went back to the customer and said, hey, we'd like to do these two projects, you know, each of the clients, and said, we'd like to do these projects in React Native, and convince them to switch technologies just prior to starting the project, which I'm not sure how that happened. Todd, my business partner, somehow went and finagled that. It was in September of 2015, I remember, which was exactly when React Native Android came out. So it was basically like React Native Android came out. We convinced two clients to go that way, and then the rest was history. But
well, you had previously worked with RubyMotion, which had a lot of issues with Android, if I remember
that
right.
That was one of the reasons we ejected from it. The iOS side of it was great, but when it went to Android, it was just really problematic. So
having this solution come along that promises a true like dual platform experience.
Yeah, I don't know how we ended up actually trusting it, but we did, and that was a good move.
It paid off.
But it was definitely rough in those early days, Simon. I definitely remember that.
Remember navigation? How many tries did it take us to get that right?
We used React Native Navigation Flux? No.
I remember the Flux.
Router, React Native Router Flux. Yeah.
Router Flux. Okay.
I think Router Flux is still a pretty decent library. They are maintaining it.
From what I understand, the API was always really nice, but it was just mainly, you know, React Navigation won for probably other reasons. But
Router Flux had a big update not that long ago, where their API changed to really like resemble React Navigation in a lot of ways.
Those were the days.
So Simon, I'm guessing that at Facebook, you know, so you were doing the Flux architecture for your clients as well, right? So probably,
yeah.
Did you ever do Redux or?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, Redux just took the world by storm with Dan Abramov in whatever that was, 16, I want to say, right?
Yeah.
And so prior to Redux, there was how many Flux implementations? Do you guys remember? There was dozens. There's a new one, you know, and it was like we had Thunks and we had Sagas. Thunks and Sagas probably came out after Redux. So yeah, there were dozens of Flux implementations and a lot of them were modeled after what we had at Facebook, right? And so, you know, we pioneered, I guess, or, you know, the UIE team, the core UIE team in Facebook kind of pioneered that idea of this one-way data flow stuff, which became, you know, how these things become buzzword soups. Everybody's like, my new framework has, you know, micro front-end architecture, one-way data flow, you know, and so like, but one-way data flow was the buzzword, right? That was what everybody was after. And then Redux just came and just wiped out the competition, right?
Yeah. I remember talking to a friend, we went to lunch and we were talking about Flux different, you know, I think we were looking at a library called Reflux, which was the worst name. And it was okay. I went to lunch with a friend who said, have you ever heard of Redux? I've been using that and it's pretty cool. And I think that's when we ended up switching over.
So wait, Reflux? Like acid
reflux.
Like acid reflux.
Right. Well, the...
That's terrible.
You know, it was called Flux and they wanted to come in. And actually, I think, I could be wrong, but I think that Redux was kind of a play off of Reflux, the name. But I could be wrong about that. But yeah, there were a bunch of kind of wars around what would win. And then Redux won, for better or worse. And we all started using it. We've been using Mavic State Tree lately. I'm actually the primary maintainer now on Mavic State Tree, which we'll probably do an episode about.
Tend to be Mavic State Tree evangelists, but
yeah,
it has its quirks.
It does, yeah.
It's ups and downs for sure.
Jamin's super passionate about Mavic.
I love it, but that's for another time. We have a topic today. I guess this is a good time to introduce that. The topic today, we're going to be talking about React Native on the web and just kind of deep diving into that, talking about our experiences with it as a panel. We're going to talk about, well, a lot of things, but just React Native on the web itself. Before I get too much further, I will say this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. Infinite Red, of course, is a company that I'm part owner of, and it is a premier React Native design and development agency located fully remote in the USA. We have years of React Native experience, as I just kind of talked about, and we have deep roots in the React Native community. We are the hosts of Chain React, which is a React Native conference. We publish a React Native newsletter for over 11,000 subscribers. If you aren't subscribed, go check it out, reactnativenewsletter.com, and you can hit us up hello@infinite.red if you need help on your React Native project. Or you can email me directly, jamin@infinite.red, and I will get back with you. You can learn more on our website, infinite.red.
And you guys run the conference, the really famous React Native conference, right?
Yeah, we do.
Chain React.
Chain React is about 500 developers, I think, we get, and from representing 200-ish different companies. We've had Facebook announce features like the last Chain React, we had Mark Horowitz do a talk on Hermes when they announced Hermes at Chain React. And by the way, they just, this is a little bit of an aside, they just released Hermes for iOS. Or actually, it's not released yet, but it's coming in 0.64. So
wow,
that's coming pretty soon.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that should be a game changer on the iOS side.
Once that comes out, we'll have to do an episode on Hermes for iOS.
Maybe I should try to get Mark in here.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
I always found the iOS performance pretty good, actually.
It is. I think the one thing that Hermes might help solve is the startup time, really, mm-hmm. on the right. iOS side. Performance is pretty good otherwise.
Mm-hmm. All I want from Hermes for Christmas is to support date.toLocalString. And if they give me that for Christmas, I'll be happy.
You know, they gave us proxy, and I didn't think that was going to happen. So, you know, it will probably happen at some point. Cool. So let's talk React Native on the web. So I guess my question to the panel, and Simon, feel free to jump in first if you have some thoughts on this. Why would we ever use React Native on the web? It doesn't make sense because you already have React on the web. That's where React Native came from, was React. And React Native actually has a version of React embedded in it. It seems like to me that if you're going to use React on the web, why not just use React and not go to React Native and then backport right back to the website of things? You know, obviously, I know the answer to this, but I'm asking the question to spur some conversation. Why would you use React Native on the web?
Yeah, that's the question, right? That's the question everybody asks, you know, and I've heard it put like, you know, we've come full circle. We're just laying abstractions on top of abstractions, and now we're back to where we started. Like, you know, what's the deal? And so it's a thin layer. Like I will say, React Native Web is a thin layer on just regular React for web, just to be API compatible with React Native. Like, that's probably the short answer, right? That's the TLDR of it. The kind of why would I want this thing is obviously universal apps, right? So, you know, Evan Bacon from the Expo team has been huge on universal apps. And I should probably differentiate that even though Expo Web, you know, is kind of all the build tooling around React Native Web, but the actual core React Native Web is from a guy named Nicholas, which is ex-Twitter. So he was at Twitter when they built that. In fact, Twitter itself, both mm-hmm. the desktop and the mobile website, are built on React Native Web, which is great. Mm-hmm. So
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, and they did it not because they wanted to share code with their mobile app, but because they wanted a number of things that you get out of the box with React Native that you all probably know and love, which is you get things like no CSS, right? You remember the famous like Christopher Chedeau talk about like why CSS is broken and, you know, why styling in JavaScript is the way to go forward. So you get all of that, right? And it's really well optimized in the way that they generate those class names and everything. And then maybe the biggest reason that I initially got into it kind of prior to it being really smooth in terms of universal apps was that you get this flex layout. You get the layout model of React Native without having to try to mess around with all the browser incompatibility stuff where you have to like put prefixed, you know, flex. You have to remember the flex behavior differences between browsers. And I know that's probably a non-issue today because everybody's gone Chromium, including Edge and everything. But, you know, that was like, you know, what jQuery came into the world to do back then, which is just like gloss over, put an abstraction layer on top of all the weird browser stuff. I feel kind of like React Native did that for flex layout.
The biggest engine that you have to deal with outside of the Chromium browsers is on iOS. You have Safari and you have to deal with that. So clearly having an abstraction that works well across browsers is still a pretty big deal.
And it's interesting you say that because we're at Infinite Red, we're working on a shared mobile and web project at the moment. Most of us are React Native developers primarily. I don't have a ton of front-end web experience personally. Not good at CSS, but I was able to hop in and basically start using React Native Web and build components using like the React Native Flex skills that I had that just transferred. And I don't think I really fully appreciated that benefit of React Native until you just said that. Because I've never been a web developer, I've never really had to feel the pain of IE and all the different browser incompatibilities.
So that's interesting to hear your perspective on React Native Web. I've never used it. And I have a similar product where we have a mobile React Native app. And for the web version, we have a full-blown React web app. So how much work is it for me to like translate that to React Native Web? Or is that worth it? Something like that, would it be worth it?
No, probably not. I mean, you would definitely have to kind of rewrite all of your... I mean, okay, you could do it gradually, right? So you can one component at a time. I've definitely introduced React Native Web into projects, and that's totally fine. I don't know that there's like a trick to converting it. I mean, you know what? It's a little bit similar like to the age-old question when React Native came out, and people are like, great, I already have a React website. Just slap it into React Native, and it'll be a mobile app. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, to some extent, sure, you share your business logic, you share your, you know, reducers or whatever. Right. But yeah, no, I think directly to that point, it's kind of a ground up.
Okay.
React DOM is kind of a leaky abstraction. Not kind of. It really is a leaky abstraction. You're using divs, you're using A, you're using, you know, there are all of these different elements that come specifically from HTML. And so you're using all of that stuff in React itself. So in some ways, it feels like React Native is a more pure abstraction where you have view and, you know, button. These are things that can work across many platforms. It's not necessarily just specifically for the web.
React Native Web feels to me instinctively what React should have been. Like having learned React Native first and sort of getting to know it as like, okay, so you have the business logic and then you have this view layer that's an abstraction on top of the native UI components. And so not having ever done React.js, what I would expect React.js to be is the same thing, except the view layer is an abstraction over HTML. But instead, it just uses HTML. And so React Native Web sort of brings that view layer abstraction back in.
Interesting. So like I haven't used React Native Web as I was mentioning. So does it not have divs and A's and stuff like that?
No, you pretty much are using the same stuff as React.
You're pulling in a views, you're pulling in text, you're pulling in touchable opacity.
And it translates into a web component then?
Yeah, it translates it into HTML.
I mean, not web components in the sense of like, you know, web components, TM, registered trademark, not web components, web components. but no, I think you bring up a good point, Aditi, which is that what do you do about an A, right? Has anybody ever tried to write a link in React Native and you're like, wait a second, I have to pull in this linking library, I have to imperatively open things. And So like, that's a super legit kind of concern when you jump in there. You're like, great, I can just like do all my mobile stuff on web. And then before you know it, you look at the markup and everything's divs. And it's like your link is a div and your heading is a div and everything. And then you realize this is awful, but it isn't, right? So like, that's not the end of the story. Yeah. There is, you know, you get to add accessibility roles to things. So in the case of an A, like, or, you know, anchor, hyperlink, or whatever you want to call it, they do have the concept of a view with accessibility role link, and then you throw your href on there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Would you say that React Native Web makes accessibility harder, or it doesn't matter, having never done? Because it seems like that sounds confusing to me, that I have to know that I need an accessibility role for it to be an A tag.
Okay, I can give you the... So the... you know, like the textbook answer is that we're supposed to semantically describe what we mean with the element, not necessarily like syntactically describe that it's an A. So it's like we should describe that we want it to have the role of a link, not, but, you know, okay, whatever. That answer aside, like I think the essence of it is that, yeah, you're trading off one pain point for another, right? So you're trading off the pain point of, you know, not like... You don't have to deal with CSS and browser compatibility and flex layout, and you get a bunch of stuff out of the box for free. I mean, you get a like with Expo Web, you get a ton out of the box for free from like, you know, camera and QR code scanners and like, you know, local storage and abstraction layer over all that stuff. It's great. But the trade-off then is that you do have to like fight with it sometimes to do like really web specific stuff.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like if we want like a cross-platform app with iOS and Android and also have a web version, then React Native Web is just going to take care of all these things.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love to do, right? It's like you try to kind of, you sell it as, okay, cool, we only have to do 20% more work to get a web version, right? And, you know, take that number with a grain of salt, give or take, whatever. But, you know, there's some amount of work additionally that's like less work than doing the thing twice, right?
And that was the promise of React Native with iOS and Android as well. It wasn't so much that you could necessarily just drop the code into both iOS and Android and have it work. It was more that it was going to reduce the amount of work and also the amount of like context shifting between the two. In practice, it's actually worked out better than we expected. And we've noticed that also with React Native Web. I'm going to go back to something Robin said earlier about how, you know, maybe React should have been what React Native Web is now. And I would agree with that in abstract. I think that there is one aspect, though, that you have to think about, and that is the adoption side. So React wasn't the winner yet. And if it had come in and said, okay, you're not going to be writing divs, you're going to be writing views.
You have to learn a whole new DSL.
Whole new API. Yeah. It probably wouldn't have achieved the adoption.
It's true. It's like you can, I mean, one of the selling points was you can, it's the same HTML and CSS that you already use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that time, it wasn't even like React, you know, Simon said, like React Native wasn't really, it wasn't known outside of Facebook. It wasn't known that React was going to be anything other than a web framework at that point, publicly.
That makes sense.
Even among the creators, I don't think, right? So like, I guess it's somewhat little known, but Jordan Walk is the creator of React, right? And I don't think he ever had dreamed up, you know, mobile, like native mobile apps with React. And, you know, he ended up moving on to Reason and a few other languages and stuff. But yeah, so I think, you know, to take your point even further, it's like, it's not even that it wasn't a defining, you know, goal of it. It kind of wasn't even on their radar until I think Christopher came along and was like, hey, I got this crazy idea. Like, what if we took the principles that we just learned and just applied it to a new medium? And, you know, to go back to what you said, Robin, it's like, these are generic primitives. These are building blocks of like whether you're writing a view that's going to be like a PDF doc. Like I've seen, you know, like React using the context of PDF docs or terminal applications or whatever. And it's like these are basic primitives of views and texts and, you know, interactive elements and things like that. And so it's like, why couldn't we apply that to something else? Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
I remember when we first heard about React Native, the misunderstanding or the misconception we had was, oh, they're running this in a browser because, you know, obviously you're using a web framework, so how are you possibly running this in native? But then we looked into it and no, actually there's no browser, there's no web view involved here. So all of the negatives of Cordova, PhoneGap, etc., which we all had kind of this visceral reaction to because we tried to do that before and it didn't work out so well. That was just incorrect. It was, you know, these are native views, and that's the brilliance of it. And I think it was enabled by that, you know, one-way data flow, virtual DOM, all of those ideas that came out of React, which worked really well for abstracting across browsers and making sure that it, you know, had the performance it needed. It managed to decouple to the point where you could just put it into a completely new medium. And now it's not just iOS and Android. There's Windows, there's
Mac OS, you know,
TVOS.
Yeah, TVOS.
Lots of other places where it's being used. In fact, this week I saw someone got Ignite working on TVOS, which is, you know, Ignite is our framework that we use to spin up new React Native apps. And we never intended it to work on TVOS, but you know, they got it working. So that's a pretty cool thing to see. And it wasn't that much work, I don't think.
So back to React Native Web, how do you integrate like routers? Can you use something like a React router within React Native Web?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to how much of your code you want to reuse. So if you want to reuse 100% of your code across those platforms, then you need libraries to support both out of the box. And so React Navigation is the answer there. But React Navigation isn't necessarily the right tool on web, right? In terms of the right tool as in like the perfect tool. So yeah, I think what you suggested, using React Router is totally fine, but you're just going to branch. You're going to have, okay, this is my routing logic for web, and this is my separate routing logic for mobile. And there's runtime branching, and there's compile time branching. So with compile time branching, as you probably know, where you do .ios.ts and .android.ts, right? It's the same thing where you do .web.ts, and then you're working on the web.
So there is flexibility to, you know, pick and choose certain things.
Definitely. Definitely. That's the kind of the approach that we take is we're not afraid to write platform specific stuff where it makes sense. Like navigation is one of those areas. And of course you have things that need to go into the native layer on mobile that you write specifically for mobile, and then you write a web version. We're not aiming for 100% reuse, because you lose efficiency in the last 20%, kind of. It stops being worth it. But yeah, so we use React Router on web and React Navigation on native. And then whatever code reuse we get is gravy, essentially, because the thing that we're replacing was two completely separate apps. So anything more than zero code reuse is a win.
One thing I feel we didn't really talk about is JSX. I mean, when JSX came out, I remember the community's reaction. That was like everyone freaked out. And then, you know, turns out that was like one of the best decisions, because now we have multiple renderers. And, you know, even when Vue came in to try to fill that gap for all the people that freaked out about JSX, you know, React is still the bigger ecosystem. Everyone's okay with it. And I even see really quickly that, you know, they want to work on React Native for Harmony OS even. So it's like supporting all these render targets, like being tied to HTML would never have gotten us there, right?
What did you say? Harmony?
Harmony OS, like the Huawei, like...
Oh,
yeah. Because they got banned by Google, so...
Yeah, they got banned by... wasn't the U.S. government who laid down the hammer? It's not like Google cared. Google was kind of told to, right? Isn't that... Yeah, I remember
The U.S. government laid down the ban hammer, and Huawei overnight had to come up with their own operating system. Wow. Which they claim is much faster than Android, so we'll see. It's much better, but like I don't know. We'll see. Without starting, So yeah, I think React Native will probably support that too. So that's crazy. We have like all these renderers. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they built an operating system from scratch. I would guess that they'd take the core of Android and just layer on a UI layer, you know, like a GUI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something, right? Because a lot of what Google, because they, you know, they can't stop them from using an open source project. I think a lot of what Google said they can't use is their ecosystem. They're like, you know, all the stuff that comes preloaded on Android from, you know, the Play Store to like Gmail and those kind of things, right?
Google Maps and all this stuff, which is super useful.
I mean, the interesting thing is China has a lot of alternatives to all the Google products anyway, because Google's effectively banned there, right? So it's like they have their own search engines. They probably have their own maps. I'm sure they have like internally everything. So that may not have been as big of a leap. But I guess now we're getting way off topic.
Yeah. We are. But I think that, you know, Harris, your point was that... these abstractions allow for targeting all these different platforms when they come out. which is just a huge, huge advantage. And I think for those developers who have been around a while, like myself, you know, we kind of look at this and roll our eyes like, oh, yeah, a lot of systems have claimed they were going to be fully cross-platform, but, you know, have they really delivered? Well, React Native has actually really delivered. I mean, you know, Microsoft is now rewriting large chunks of Office in React Native, and that's not just on iOS and Android. That's Windows, that's web, that's a lot of different things. So it definitely is living up to the promise, it seems.
After 5 years, though, right? Like, I mean, in certain ways, like, it didn't live up to the promise in, okay, that's not true. It probably didn't meet the performance expectations, you know, because there was no promise mm-hmm. around performance, but it probably didn't really meet the performance expectations until Reanimated 2, right? That, like, I think mm-hmm. now, which mm-hmm. is, you know, not, I don't even know that is in stable release yet, but it's like now all of a sudden, because on my most recent project, I've been using that, and I'm like, this changes the game, right? This is next level.
Yeah, and I think that some of the re-architecture of React Native itself on iOS and Android, there's Fabric and Turbo modules and other efforts that are going to really make a difference for, you know, being able to achieve the user experiences people want.
Yeah, because Reanimated 2 would not have been possible without Turbo modules, right? Because they basically, you need to mm-hmm. run, you need to run animations off the main thread, but without the overhead of message mm-hmm. serialization and deserialization or whatever, something like that. That's probably a naive yeah. description of why it's amazing, but it is.
Right, absolutely.
I have a question for you, Simon. Why do you think, as you know, someone who's sort of been closer to the React team than any of us, why do you think Android has always lagged behind?
I mean, I can take a stab at that. I don't know that I know the answer, but my the feeling, especially internally at Facebook, was that supporting the Android ecosystem. So there's nothing wrong with Android as operating system or whatever, right? The Android ecosystem is a disaster, right? So there's just so many millions of devices around the world, or I should say, you know, hundreds of thousands of like different kinds of devices, and the versioning is a disaster, right? Like, I mean, good luck ever getting an update if you're on some, like, you know, I don't know, 4-year-old, you know, no-name brand Android phone, and a large portion of the world is, right? Underpowered mm-hmm. devices, a lot of them don't have a GPU. There's like, so anyway, like, I think it's just that you have to support such a wide range of devices. And a lot of, so, you know, remembering back from my time at Google, internally what they would always say about Android is that we have to do it ourselves if we want certain things done right. And so they did, right? So like Google did their, so originally they tried their Nexus line, right? And then, which they partnered with HTC for, and they still mm-hmm. were getting crashes and stuff that they later determined was because the driver and hardware layer. So then they pulled it all in themselves where they're writing their own drivers in-house. And now things are like working up to the standard that they wanted it to. And so what it comes down to is like, even if the operating system's great, even if the hardware is great, like, some, you know, hardware manufacturer that you've never heard of is building a drivers for their chipset, for their Wi-Fi chipset that just is plain buggy, right? And it's like, you know, these are, especially, you know, when you think about camera, like if you've ever had crashes on Android that you can only replicate on certain, that you can only repro on certain devices where like you open the front-facing camera and the app crashes and stuff like that. These are terrible things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, I might have accidentally ranted about the Android ecosystem.
It's okay. I want to bring this back to React Native Web for a brief moment. I have a couple of questions for the panel. One is, what are the pain points that are still there with React Native Web?
I've run into a lot of sort of challenges trying to use escape hatches. So for example, let's say you wanted to do like a drag and drop file uploader, right? Mm-hmm. So that doesn't exist in React Native. There's no concept of that. So you have to do one of two things. You have to pull in a library that was not built for React Native Web, which is definitely the easier path mm-hmm. to go. But that's likely going to need, or depending on which library you pull in, it's going to need a handle to a DOM element, right? So you have to find a way to get mm-hmm. a reference to a particular DOM element. Which, okay, not the end of the world, but there are definitely some challenges around that. The other option is that you kind of write your own, which I've gone down the path of, and, you know, you have to be like, if you're part of a larger, you know, if you're part of a larger dev team where it's more likely that you're going to write some internal tooling, or you have an infrastructure team at your company, like you guys at Infinite, right? You probably have an infra team, right? That can like help build these like tooling when you need these challenges. And so if that's the case, so like, you know, when I was running an agency, we had an internal infra team, and it's like, if a product team needed a thing, they would go to the infra team and be like, hey, could you guys build out this thing for me and make it work, which is great. But, you know, not every developer has that opportunity. So you end up sometimes stuck in a place where you have to interface between some library you pulled off of NPM and the React Native web ecosystem. And now I've learned to kind of solve all those things, but that's probably a pain point for people getting into it, right?
I can definitely see that.
Hey, Jamin, hey, who's on our infra team?
speaking of which, I saw Robin. Hey,
what's that?
I'm probably it, but I don't know. I'm probably the closest thing.
We have about eight developers.
Oh, okay.
Is that right? Eight.
Wait, what?
Eight? How many developers? Nine.
We have 18. We have 18 developers. 18
developers.
Yeah, I just counted last night.
Really?
Come on,
yeah. We have less than that now.
The team grew quick. That's
on the React Native. On the React Native team.
On the React. Oh no, that's across the whole country.
Robin doesn't count anyone who's not React.
Yeah,
Native.
Like actual developers. Yeah.
She seems like, where did all these 10 extra developers come from?
Yeah. Okay. No, that's across the whole company. And count some contractors and stuff that we have working on some projects. But yeah, our team size is about 25 people. So infra team would probably make sense at a bigger size. But we do a lot of it ourselves, like startups, like, you know, startup technical teams do. And you have to take these challenges head on yourself and devise solutions around them. I totally agree, Simon. That's a pain point of React Native Web. I think that another piece of that is that so much of stuff on the web is for React Native or it's for React JS. And when you have this kind of in between of the React Native web, you tend to kind of hit a point where the advice is you just, it's harder to find, you know, common paths and accepted, you know, this is the way to do it. So people tend to kind of have to build their own way a little bit. And I know that I feel like everybody who's done React Native Web and React Native has their own way of sharing components between the two, you know, and sharing logic between the two. How do you kind of bring these two things together? Metro is famously finicky about things like symlinks and other things that are helpful for this sort of a problem. We'll probably in a future, we probably don't have time this episode, but in a future episode, we'll talk more about how you might structure a project for that. I think that would be a really interesting one. But yeah, that's definitely another pain point. Any other pain points?
I guess accessibility is always a challenge. And that's probably a pain point regardless. But and to some degrees, React Native Web gives you more accessibility, gives you some accessibility options, or gives you some abstraction over certain kinds of accessibility things. But these are small pain points, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Now, when would you decide to go with React JS? This is my last question. When would you decide to go with React JS instead of React Native Web, or vice versa? What types of factors lead into a decision? You know, we're going to go with React Native Web. And I know we just ran into this with the project that Robin's on. Well, I guess it was in March or whenever we started the project, but we were going to be building the same components in web and mobile. They were going to be very similar, maybe minor differences. And so we had a decision to make, and we ultimately went with React Native Web because of the code sharing. But what types of things, when would you decide to go with React Native Web or React JS?
So I have done a React Native and then a counterpart React application. So the reason why we decided to go that way, I didn't know much about React Native Web then. This was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. And we wanted a slightly different look and feel. We just didn't want to replicate the look and feel of the mobile on our web. We didn't want it to look like a web app that, you know, somebody can tell that, hey, this is just a web version of a mobile app. We wanted it to be its own thing. And, you know, we wanted to use all of the real estate to show some other features and things on the web screen. So we chose React, but now that I've heard from you guys today, I don't know. Maybe we should have picked React Native Web. So I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
It was a lot more rough in those days, though, so I'm not sure that it was a bad decision at the time. It's definitely come a long way.
Yeah, they just did a major rewrite, like a few months ago. At the time, mm-hmm. you might have made the right decision for sure. And, you know, there's things you can't use, right? So maybe not can't, but like if you're going to go down the path of using Tailwind, which is a great, you know, set of, I guess, styling primitives or, you know, gives you a lot out of the box. It's modern day Bootstrap in certain ways that looks better. And mm-hmm. if you're going to use that, then, you know, don't fight with trying to make that work with React Native Web. Probably just go React JS, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that may be true for a number of frameworks, right?
And things like Next.js, that's another example. You can use React Native Web with Next.js, but last time I looked at it, at least, it was not trivial. And it's sort of like, well, don't fight the system at this point, you know, just roll with it. But as you said, Simon, you can actually replace things piecemeal as well. You don't have to go all in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And we got to check with Evan and Brent from Expo about the Next thing, but they've been working very hard to make it work Next really well, I think. So I'm hoping that situation is better than when you last checked.
I love what they're doing over in Expo with React Native Web. I think that that's going to be fantastic. It's a great team. They do a great job.
Yeah, they're incredible.
So I think that's probably good for now. We have tons more to talk about with this subject, but I think that we'll have to leave it for another episode. I'm going to move into another quick little section that we do called Weird Bugs, where we ask, has anybody run into a weird bug in the last, you know, few weeks or been dealing with it? You don't have to have solved it, just kind of talk about it, or maybe worked with someone who's run into a weird bug. I have one that I heard about kind of secondhand from one of our developers, but before I talk about it, does anybody else have a weird bug that they want to talk about?
Go for it, Jamin.
I think you go first. We'll turn it over in our head for a sec.
I'll take this then. Yeah, perfect. So Frank let me know about, so Frank works for us. He's a React Native and React developer. And this is, I think, something that if you've worked on React Native apps after being a web developer, you've had to kind of adjust to, but you don't really have cookies in the same sense. You know, cookies aren't exactly the same deal when you're working with React Native, because obviously you're not in a web context, you don't have a browser, you're not in a web view. And he had a situation where after a session timeout, like after over an hour, some users would open the app and try to log in and they would hit an error in this app that he was building that would be like a 500 error. And they were using an API client called Super Agent. He said, you know, this works well, but this client was really built for the web and it handles cookies behind the scenes. And, you know, for React Native app, usually you're passing through an auth token or JWT in a header when you're making requests. So the backend was never built in this particular app was never really built for mobile. It was just kind of an adapted web backend, and it was looking for a cookie. That's what it was trying to do, is look for a cookie. So he eventually suspected, oh, wait a minute here, there must be some long expired, you know, cookie value that it's looking for. And the backend is freaking out at this point. So we need to have the backend team go in there and give us some love. You know, this relying on a cookie is not going to work here.
We've actually been experiencing something sort of similar.
On your project?
On our project, because we're sharing business logic now. In addition to sharing mm-hmm. components with React Native Web, we're sharing business logic. I mean, sharing API calls. And so the mobile app obviously uses authentication headers. So the web does too now. But their API previously used cookies for authentication. So we're having to kind of do a little bit of a hybrid approach and like manually set a cookie with the token. And then they're having to change some of their endpoints to like
mm-hmm.
accept auth headers and recognize those. So Yes, definitely a challenge.
I mean, like in my mind, the subtext of that whole like fetching works differently on mobile is that you have no concept of an origin, right? So same origin policy is out the window. Mm-hmm. Anything related to cores is really out the window. And in some ways it's more powerful. Like, so think about it, a React Native app. So if you didn't have a password on your router, your 192.168. whatever, or your password is admin, think about it, a React Native app that you're running in your local network could hit a web request to that, because there's no concept of an origin, log in, change your router settings and do that kind of stuff, and you wouldn't even know, right? And so like this is things that maybe people don't realize that we get protected from on the web, where some random website can't just make a request to my router, log in and start doing things. Mm-hmm. Whereas on like mobile, or at least on React Native, and probably on any mobile, like it can go nuts with the, you know, like with making requests everywhere. But then the flip side to that is, so it's more powerful in that regard. But then the flip side of that is, like you were saying, you have to manually manage your cookies. You have to set every little thing independently, right?
I've been dealing with that with React Native WebView, which I also am one of the maintainers on. And, you know, we have a pull request right now waiting to be merged that persists cookies between reloads and sessions and stuff. Not between sessions, but, you know, it just kind of behaves like you would expect a cookie to behave. But it's very kind of like, it just feels a little weird to be storing cookies in WebView and, you know, in just the lookup table and sending them along and like checking the origin. It's like we're re-implementing a browser, basically. Like, I don't know if I feel qualified to do that. This feels dangerous. Like I'm totally missing something.
It's like rolling your own crypto. We're not supposed to be doing this. This is above our... Yeah.
Exactly. You know, if you use React Native WebView, make sure that you review all of the thousands of lines of code to make sure that everything works exactly how you want it to. That's my disclaimer. Right.
It's funny that you mentioned Corsairs not being a thing with mobile, because we've been battling Corsairs pretty much nonstop for the last month on the website, but like the mobile side is all smooth sailing because like Cors isn't even a thing. And so I'm like, I'm not sure how I feel about having to deal with Corsairs on the mobile side. I kind of like this open security policy here.
But the reason for that is because you're not necessarily on the mobile, the native side, just running kind of random JavaScript that can be injected from, you know, wherever. You're dealing with a little more, hopefully, a little more trusted code.
It just leads to a more frustrating developer experience having to spend your entire day being like telling the server team, hey, can you guys fix the Cors errors on this endpoint? Okay, now this one.
But yeah, in terms of crazy bugs, I would say all other crazy bugs that I've experienced in the last in any time recently fall into the category of keyboard avoiding view or keyboard avoiding scroll view. Like that just is the bane of my existence.
Oh, me too. I hate those.
So bad.
Yeah, me too. It's just, it's still not resolved on my end. I've tried using everything.
There's no right answer. You can't win this. You can't win that battle.
No, no, no.
I wonder why. Still see a lot of apps that don't get it right either. Like I know the pain. I just wish we had like a good solution for all the devices.
I know there's like keyboard avoiding view, keyboard aware scroll view, and then there's just, you know, so many different things. But for sure, it either breaks on Android. If it works on Android, it'll break on iOS. It's just like back and forth and back and forth.
Does anyone know why it's so hard to get that right?
It's just a hard problem, right? You're talking about changing half of your screen real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. But I feel like shouldn't like the native side give us the exact offsets that we need? And exactly. Like that's what I'm trying to understand. Like, why is don't we have like a simple way of getting those values?
Is this a hard problem for pure native too, or is it all figured out for pure iOS and pure Android?
I remember it being a hard problem for native too, because there aren't the tools like Harris said, and there generally aren't. In the early days, it was easy because we never built for Android, and iOS, the keyboard was always the same size. You could literally hard code in the values into the app.
500 pixels.
It's like when the header bar was always 20 pixels. Was it 20 at the top? And it's like then
44 for the I think it was 44 pixels for the header. Is that right? And 20 pixels for the status bar or something? Yeah.
And then you have the in-call status bar that came around and screwed everything up, right? And then on top of that, now we have the notch and
Notch.
The notch. Yeah, thanks a lot.
And now Android devices have notch too.
Mm-hmm.
Some, but not all.
And now the new pixels on Android have the pinhole, right? So they have the hole in the upper left.
Oh, no.
Which I like. I actually think is probably a good solution to that problem. Yeah. It's just that now we have to think about more things, right?
Cool. Well, I think we are out of time here. Thanks so much, Simon, for joining us. It was awesome to chat with you, and hopefully we can have you on in a future episode.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. Great talking to all of you.
Where can people find you online, Simon?
So you can find me on Twitter, which is SSTUR and then an underscore at the end. So you have to have that trailing underscore because someone took my username on there. You can always give me a shout out at sstur@me.com. But yeah, I mean, if you search my name, I'm really easy to find. So you can find me for sure.
Perfect. And Harris, you have a new Twitter handle. What is it?
Nomadic Spoon. That's where you'll find me at Nomadic Spoon.
Yeah. I can definitely verify for the nomadic side of that. not sure about the spooning, but that's... Robin, you're at Robin_Heinz with an E.
Yes.
And Aditi is Aditi Ravi on Twitter. Perfect. And we'll link to all of those things in the show notes. Thank you all. Make sure to subscribe on all the major podcasting platforms. We are called React Native Radio. As always, we are brought to you by Infinite Red. Check us out, infinite.red, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. See y'all.
Have a great day.